infidelity, adultery, cheating. To watch primetime television or just about any movie rated PG-13 or above, you would think it's just part of life. And, of course, that's the case for many marriages. But breaking faith in a marriage, no matter how commonplace, is still a big deal. The beginning of the end for many relationships, or for some, a painful period from which there can be, and often is, a fresh start. This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Today, our resident psychologist, Dr. Bruce Leese, has forsaken all other places he could be to talk with us about marital unfaithfulness, what causes it, what to do about it, and also how to do everything you can to prevent it ever happening. Bruce, Dr. Leese, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Always great to be here.
Good to see you. So help us establish what we're talking about here today right from the outset. I think we know on some level what we're talking about when we say marital infidelity, but it can take many forms, right?
Yeah, it can take many forms, and it also happens outside of marriages. It happens in dating couples. It happens in couples who are, who are unable to get married because they are they're gay or lesbian. So anybody who makes a commitment to a relationship that strays from that relationship is having what we could call an affair or engage in infidelity. So
you hear people say things like an emotional affair. That's a real thing.
Yeah, and I there's not a lot of value in distinguishing emotional versus sexual. There are people who consider a one-night stand when they're traveling to be no big deal, but you know, if they say they wouldn't get emotionally involved with anyone. Both can be destructive, but it's a subjective thing, and if you are drawn away from the relationship that you're committed to, it can be considered any of those terms we've used, unfaithfulness, extramarital relationship, or an affair.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how common this is. And I know that this is all anecdotal and, of course, obviously hard to measure on some level. Do we really have any idea how often marital unfaithfulness or relationship unfaithfulness occurs?
Yeah, there have been lots of good studies. The problem is that few people will really be interested in admitting to extramarital relationships. But in one of the biggest nationwide studies, they found that 20 to 25% of people are involved and have been involved over their lifetime. So if 20 to 25% of people in a survey admit to it, I won't estimate how many it really is, but it must be way more than that.
I think it's a pretty conservative estimate.
Very conservative. In fact, the authors of that study say that it's conservative.
And what are some of the things that we know about that number, that 20 to 25%? For example, do more men or more women commit infidelity?
More men than women, though that gap is narrowing as women enter into the workplace, as they realize their own power and success in society. It's very interesting that the more successful or powerful or wealthy or socially, advanced, I guess you'd call it, the further people get in their careers and their lives success-wise, the more likely it is that they will have an affair.
Well, that's kind of interesting. You might think that that it would be more common among those who were feeling unfulfilled in other ways or something.
You would think that, but becoming more successful gives somebody the feeling that they can get just about anything in life.
Does that explain the patterns we've seen with politicians, for example, who commit these acts and as though they're never going to be caught?
Exactly. They feel like they're invisible, and they know that they can do it. They don't have any question in their mind that people would succumb to their seduction.
So how about other categories? I mean, are older people or younger people more or less likely, longer marriages, or are those more recently married?
People who get married young, under 16, are 4.5 times more likely to have an affair than people that get married beyond 23 years old in one study. So if you got married young, you're more likely to stray. You're also more likely to get divorced. And it's very important to note that the difference between on surveys, the difference between being very satisfied in your marriage and kind of satisfied and then not satisfied, all those differences are significant. A person who is not satisfied in their relationship is 4 times as likely to have an affair than someone who says they're very satisfied. So not satisfied to very satisfied 4 times. And then a person who's only kind of satisfied is twice as likely to have an affair than somebody who's very satisfied. And that's, in national polling research. So it's not enough to just be kind of satisfied, to not be tempted to go outside of your relationships.
You have to be really satisfied.
You have to be very satisfied. And there's another interesting statistic. If you are religious and very satisfied, you're pretty much affair-proof. But the effect of religion drops off as people become less satisfied in their relationship. Being religious in and of itself does not protect somebody.
And by religious, the statistic is based on being actively
involved. Actively involved, actually participating, going to church services, whatever.
Are there parts of the country? Are there geographic correlations?
I have never seen anything about that. That certainly is an interesting question. There are certainly stereotypes about parts of the country that are more or less liberal and therefore perhaps more or less sexually liberal.
But yeah, are there liberal or conservative correlations here? Maybe we don't even want to get into those questions today. I wonder, Bruce, it's not really our focus today, but of course there are some relationships where couples sort of come to an unspoken understanding that this is going on or something like that. Does that happen? I mean, how often does that happen?
Oh, I have seen that way more than I would have expected before I started doing psychology for a living. I never would have expected as many people as do to accept extramarital relationships. Some of the most disturbed relationships I've seen and troubled marriages I've seen, some of them actually permitted, I guess, what they called swinging, where they actually actively participated in getting involved with other people. I will say I have never met a couple that agrees to have extramarital relationships where they're both healthy. So if somebody's doing that out there, it's probably time to ask for help.
From a psychologist.
From a psychologist, yeah, or some kind of mental health counselor. It is just the ability to handle the discrepancy between saying you're going to love and honor somebody for the rest of your life, the ability to honor, to make that commitment and then openly, comfortably get involved with somebody else, with your partner, knowing it's just, to put it bluntly, it's just too weird to be mentally healthy.
Too weird because of the inconsistency that creates.
Discrepancy, yeah. It creates so much it should create a lot of dissonance. That's what I mean by weird.
So when we – going back to the what does seem to be a strong correlation is between marital or relationship satisfaction. Maybe could you say a little more about what satisfaction means in that sense? What kind of satisfaction are we talking about?
Well – it's become cliche, unfortunately, but it's really a legitimate goal, a very, very legitimate goal to make your life partner, your spouse, your best friend, really your best friend. And best friends listen to each other and nurture the relationship and really care about the other person's well-being. So, to really ensure that a relationship will be strong and what I like to call affair-proof, one has to take care of their marriage like nothing else. It's got to be the top priority. It's even more important than your kids, because when you make your marriage strong, your kids will benefit in ways that are profound.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about marital or other relationships, faithfulness and unfaithfulness. We're talking with Dr. Bruce Leese. If you have questions for him, our resident psychologist, you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also go to our Facebook page, KCUR's Facebook page, and post your comments or questions there. Dr. Leese, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about some of the causes or the triggers, the things that seem to lead in a more direct way to infidelity. In your experience or in the studies, do we know how affairs tend to start?
Well, yeah, they start with the illusion that a marriage is going to be an easy, romantic, smooth, no problems kind of relationship. So in the genesis, in looking at the genesis of an affair, one must go all the way back to dating. When you first date the person you marry, it's important to understand that blissful feeling, that high that you feel when you fall in love with somebody doesn't last. It's meant to go away, and that's when the work starts. And when the work is done properly, there's nothing as awesome as a marriage.
So unrealistic expectations are the starting place of an affair.
Unrealistic expectations, and then resentments and disappointments and anger and frustration and withdrawal when those expectations aren't met. So an affair starts when a person doesn't know how to take care of, nurture, and build a marriage. So when boredom sets in, or when people start to distance themselves from each other, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, when people distance themselves from each other in that primary relationship, they become lonely, and then a friendship, in air quotes, a friendship can develop to fill that void, and before you know it, the other wants, needs, and desires that are not being met in the marriage blossom into something that we then call an affair. It could be physical, or it could simply be that validation that's so addictive that people want more and more.
So you've described it, what sounds like a very gradual sort of process, sort of something where there's warning signs and you could see it coming a mile away and you had 20, 50, 100 chances to stop it. Is that how it usually goes?
There are infinite opportunities to end an affair before it blossoms into a full affair. I would say that the most common way that it happens is that two people who take a liking to each other or find each other attractive find excuses to spend time with each other, and suddenly the time they spend together is in a context that other people shouldn't know about it. So instead of just walking into the person's office and chatting, suddenly it feels like it's time to go to lunch together, and then it's time to go to dinner together. But of course, one does not go home and tell their partner, wow, I had the most amazing lunch with my, you know, with my coworker. And certainly they don't tell their spouse how attracted they are to their coworker.
Mm. So when you sometimes hear people who are caught or who have had affairs say, I don't know what happened. It just happened. It happened out of the blue. I wasn't expecting it. One day before I knew it, there I was. That isn't really the way that usually works.
Well, what's interesting is that the transition is what they're talking about, the transition from what might have been a healthy friendship in the workplace it suddenly turns into it. The suddenness could actually be the day that one person says to a coworker, why don't we grab dinner? And when their partner calls and says, you're going to be home for dinner, they say, I have to work late. That is that sudden transformation. That's the tipping point. And so that might be what people are referring to when they say it just came out of nowhere.
Hmm. I wonder if certain things have sort of made this worse, like the internet in particular. Has that made the risk of affairs worse than it used to be?
Oh, the ability to retreat to one's own private personal computer and communicate with somebody they shouldn't be communicating with after hours certainly makes it more likely. In fact, more than the internet, I guess it's part of the internet, messaging has really put people at risk for extramarital
SMS texting.
Yes, SMS text, exactly.
How so? Why?
Oh, boy, because in the past, if you wanted to talk to your boyfriend or girlfriend who you shouldn't be talking to, if you wanted to talk to them, you'd have to sneak off someplace private. But there are people who sit at the dinner table texting the person they shouldn't be texting. And when their family says, why are you texting? They say, oh, it's about work. I mean, nobody can hear those romantic words that the person at the dinner table is texting. So,
yeah, I was a pastor for 13 years, Bruce, and one of the things that that I know from talking to colleagues is that the other consequence of texting is that it leaves a record often a spouse or a partner can find.
And I'm smiling because to put it bluntly, being heavily involved in an extramarital relationship seems to make people, I hate to use the word, but I mean, it makes them stupid. It makes them actually unaware of the most obvious things like that, like whether they'll be seen at a fancy restaurant in the middle of town. I mean, they don't think about the record, the SMS record, the text record. They don't think about any of the things that will get them caught.
And why does that happen? Where does that come from? Is that biological?
Oh yeah. We have been wired, us humans, to be very, very, very attracted to others. There's no question about it. There isn't a big thinking process that goes on when people look into each other's eyes and go, wow. It just kind of happens. And that powerful feeling, in the absence of it for some time, can really be seductive. If it's repeated, it becomes addictive. So you're asking me, why do people take so many risks? Of losing everything, because it's such a powerful, overwhelming feeling to turn to that kind of biochemical mm-hmm. rush.
You make it sound almost like an addiction.
It is like an addiction. I'm actually in the midst of writing a chapter, and as I write about the lure to dangerous crack houses and to dangerous cigarettes and to dangerous other things. I've seen as much destruction over extramarital relationships, if not more, than I've seen from crack cocaine. And we did a major crack cocaine study, a multi-center study some years back. Yeah. Extramarital relationships probably cost the nation more in single-parent homes and in lawyers and court costs. It's just amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that destruction, but let me invite our listeners to join the conversation with Dr. Bruce Leese. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. If people you know have had affairs or struggled with infidelity, what was the impact of that? What were the costs? Don't, of course, disclose things here that are not for public sharing. But if you want to share a story from your own life or protect the details of those around you, give us a call at 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Bruce Leese, what are some of the consequences that happen with almost any affair, any act of unfaithfulness?
Well, at the most subtle level, what happens when somebody turns outside of their own relationship, when someone turns outside their own relationship for validation, what certainly happens is that they lose some attraction, some interest, some connectedness with their own partner. And that's costly. It's costly to the person because that is your partner, and it's costly to the person that's involved. So that's at the subtle end of the continuum. At the extreme end of the continuum, there are people who, in what is almost a psychotic, delusional state, come home and tell their spouse and their children, I've met my soulmate. You guys can keep everything. I'm out of here. And they give up everything. And it is a temporary state, just like the high one gets from drugs or alcohol is a temporary state.
The high that they had the first time they met their spouse or partner, but that has now gone away.
Right. What's interesting about that, Brian, is that people who have extramarital relationships conveniently forget that they felt so many positive things for the person that they're married to. They conveniently forget it, and they argue things like, I was never really attracted to him or her. And the partner's saying, yeah, you were. I have the poems that you wrote me to prove it. I have the pictures of you, snuggling next to me. I have the notes and the cards. Mm. So the person in the extramarital relationship denies that the person they're with was ever that awesome. But in many cases, they were.
How often does an affair lead to divorce? It's not a direct line. How often does that happen?
I'm not sure of the statistics on it. I think one of the problems with determining how often an affair leads to divorce, I think here's the deal. People come for counseling who have extramarital relationships, who are really committed to counseling, come in wanting to work on the relationship. If they stay and work at it, the offender, there's a chance that it will turn into a really decent marriage, if not a great marriage. All the people who end marriages because of extramarital relationships are probably reluctant to run around telling the community, I left my wife or husband for somebody else, and now it's not working out. So it's a very, very, very private, often hidden statistic, I'm sure.
So you've sort of set a scenario as maybe the norm where folks sort of enter into this fantasy world and think everything's going to be great in this new relationship. How often, though, after maybe a single episode of an affair, does the person who did the cheating actually say, you know, that was not what I want. It won't happen again. I think things will be all right. Is that a realistic thing to say? How often does that happen?
It is refreshing to a clinician like myself to hear somebody wake up and say, that was an awful choice. It's uncommon, terribly uncommon. More often than not, what happens is the person who hasn't left the relationship feels a terrible loss because even not knowing that their partner's in an extramarital relationship, they feel a terrible loss and they say, let's go get counseling. And the person who is involved with somebody else says, you know, we don't need counseling. You know, it's your fault. That often happens. And ultimately, it can turn out well, but it might. It certainly more often than not doesn't turn out well when only one person wants that counseling and wants that help and wants to stay in it.
Let's take a call from Priscilla in Overland Park about the consequences of an affair. Priscilla, good morning.
Hello. I had been in an abusive marriage, which was my fault for staying, but I was at a really low point, and a coworker and I kind of just sort of found each other, and it was almost like love at first sight. And he loved everything about me that my ex-husband hated about me, and it gave me like a new way to look at life, and it was actually a positive thing. And we had a 5-year affair. In the first year of that affair, I got up and got divorced and left my ex behind. And after the 5th year, I realized that this is not what I wanted to do. I should never have done it, but it served a purpose that I didn't see at the time. And so I broke up with my lover, and it was hard for me, but it was the best thing I ever did. So the whole experience for me was very positive.
In that it led you leaving an abusive marriage.
And it made me realize that as a person, I was worth something. Someone cared about me. Granted, it was the wrong person ultimately, but I had made that terrible mistake of staying in an abusive marriage. I kind of, in a sense, almost jumped to the fire from the frying pan, but I learned so much about myself by having the affair that I realized that that was not what I wanted my life to be like. That was not the person I was, and I got out of it too.
Priscilla, let me keep you on the line for a minute here and ask Dr. Bruce Lease to respond.
I have lots of questions and lots of thoughts. I really appreciate your call, Priscilla. I am curious about what your current relationship status is, but rather than ask that, let me just say a few things. There are advantages and disadvantages to having an extramarital relationship. The disadvantages far outweigh the advantages, but when somebody like yourself uses an affair to wake up to the pain they're in, the suffering that they're experiencing, ultimately it might benefit everyone involved. Sometimes the end of a relationship would be impossible for somebody that feels as bad about themselves as you probably did in an abusive relationship. So sometimes it's a ticket out of a relationship that was really ugly and destructive to any and all involved. And particularly when you learn the lessons, Priscilla, that you have learned by realizing that you need to move on and grow and become somebody strong and confident, particularly when that happens, perhaps the advantages for you outweighed the disadvantages. A lot of people would never leave a bad relationship unless they had something else waiting. And it's very rare that the something else, Priscilla, as you're saying, it's very rare that the something else is better. It's just different. And people are on best behavior and they're led to believe it's going to be better. So I am curious about how it's going now that you're out of the second relationship.
Well, first of all, I recognized after a couple of years that the affair was a stepping stone. And in my case, it was a stepping stone that I didn't realize how much I needed. When I broke up with my lover, I kind of didn't do anything with anyone for about a year or so, just because I didn't want to. The hurt was all, I mean, I understood it, why and all that, so it wasn't a psychological pining for him. Now I'm very happy. I'm single. I don't have children, which is fine. And I have friends. I have a male friend that I spend time with. But I'm quite happy and content to be on my own and live my own life and have friends in my life.
You bring up the children thing. The reason why a lot of people stay together in a sick marriage is because they think it's better for the children. In fact, it's much more destructive for children to see parents fighting, not getting along, even silent treatment, stonewalling. All of that is bad for kids. They develop habits much like their parents, and that's neglectful of what your children need. Fortunately for you, you didn't have children. It's not wise to stay in a bad marriage for children. It's wise to fix the marriage, and it's certainly unwise to get a divorce, have a bad marriage with an ex, and not get along with the parent, the other parent of your children. So, well, thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, Priscilla,
can I just say one thing?
You bet.
I grew up in a family that was abusive. My mother and father fought constantly, and so I learned how to be a victim, and ultimately I had to take responsibility for it and deal with it and make myself a non-victim. But what you say about staying for the sake of the children, parents have no idea how much damage they're inflicting on them. So thank you.
Priscilla, thank you, and best wishes to you. Appreciate your honest phone call with us here. We're going to take a break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Bruce Lease about marital infidelity. We'll ask what advice he might have for people who believe their spouse, their partner, may be in an affair or being unfaithful. Also, what should friends and family do about it if they become aware of an affair? Plus, of course, advice for all the couples out there, ways to prevent this from ever happening in the first place. You're listening to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about marriages, specifically about unfaithfulness in marriages and other relationships, too, with our resident psychologist, Dr. Bruce Lease. We would love to have you be part of the conversation. What are your questions about marriage, about faithfulness? Maybe it's your own story, but maybe it's just a curiosity or something that's arisen during our conversation here today. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Don't forget, KCUR's Facebook page is another place you can post your comments. We actually have a call that's been holding here for a while from Ken in Kansas City, Missouri. Ken, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for waiting.
Sure. You know, I'm a marriage and family therapist. I have a private practice in Brookside, and probably about 40%+ of my clientele are couples recovering from an affair. And one of the books that I think is incredibly helpful that I wanted to offer to the listening audience is a book by Shirley Glass called Not Just Friends. And it is really well written. I'm sure Dr. Lease is familiar with it. It sounds like he has a wealth of information around this. And Dr. Lease, I'm so glad that you are available to folks in Kansas City to help them work through this very difficult time in their life.
Thank you, Ken. It's very nice of you to say.
That's one book, Shirley Glass's Not Just Friends. I know we had a suggestion on Twitter of another book called Sex at Dawn, which is a book about the sort of the prehistoric origins of modern sexuality. Are there other that was from Matthew on Twitter? Are there other books or resources that you might point folks to?
There are so many. I don't often have people.
Right. There's entire aisles at the bookstore about this.
I love that Ken offered this book. Even the name should tell you something. It's not just a friendship, but. You know, it's rare that I tell people go to the internet and just surf and look for answers, but you will find so much. There's so much suffering and so much wisdom that people gain. A lot of not wisdom, but a lot of wisdom that people gain from working through extramarital relationships. But Ken, thank you for your nice thoughts.
Let's talk to Jeffrey in Kansas City, Missouri. Jeffrey, good morning.
Good morning.
tell us about your question or your comments for Dr. Leese.
Sure, doctor. I was involved in a relationship for about 10 years. We've been split up for about 10 years now, too. It still affects me. We had been real close. We'd been friends and kind of gradually got into a relationship. And it was really, you know, grounding to me to be in that relationship. She went to Europe. We'd been there together before. She went with her niece to take another trip and met somebody from our hometown, is what she claimed. But it just never crossed my mind that they'd have a affair before that. I just never would have dreamed it. And it's still shocking to me. Of course, I don't feel, you know, very confident in a relationship. I haven't been involved in one relationship since then. And it was one of the most important things for me is to be involved in that. It's hard to imagine that anyone would even want me. And things like, even small things like kissing or sex, that sometimes I even wonder if they really happen. Yeah, I think it was that shocking to me. And it just, it still affects me. I'm an Aries, too, so of course I'd like to be in a relationship. I enjoy the small things, just of touch, all the other things you can do for somebody and see a smile. And I have friends, and I enjoy those things, but it's still hard to imagine being in a relationship that anyone would want me.
It's such a huge violation of trust. It's, you know, I remember when I learned that the word con man comes from confidence, and a con man is somebody who, you know, takes advantage of you because you have confidence in them. And, you know, in a marriage or in a relationship, Jeffrey, like you described, you had confidence in this relationship, and it was devastating to learn that you shouldn't have because the person didn't – somebody else bested you in her mind. Somebody else was worth walking away from a relationship with you. You're articulating the damage that can be done. The amount of work it takes to be in a good, intimate relationship is worth it. There's a lot involved, and it's worth it. And the best way to go into a good, intimate relationship is to go in as friends. You said you have friends. If you enter into a relationship with somebody you're attracted to as a good friend, as someone who cares for people, and that person in particular, the next stages of becoming affectionate and romantic should be very natural. So entering into the dating world, there are so many different ways to meet people. There's so many different meetup groups and singles groups, and I could go on and on and on, and dating sites. It's best to go in without thinking I'm going to get hurt and go into a relationship thinking I could be a really good friend to just about anyone I care about. And then there's not that anxiety of, you know, will I be accepted? Who wouldn't accept the nurturing of somebody who can be a very good friend?
That's a good point. And the friends that she and I were friends too, and that was, you know, that you do have the trust, and of course you share things. And she is the person that suggested we get in a relationship. And it was, like I say, gradual. And it's hard to even imagine the affair that she was having. I was just shocked that I didn't, you know, even consider the person was from Kansas City. Like, oh, maybe they've been doing something before. So one of my friends said, hey, you know, that was for a month. I'd never even, it didn't cross my mind because of that trust that you spoke of.
You know, you're giving me an opportunity to make another point that I hadn't thought about earlier, Jeffrey. It is very sensible for couples to take stock of where they're at on a regular basis. It shouldn't be this anxious, you know, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Do you still love me? Do you still love me? It shouldn't be that kind of anxious, hyper, you know, are we okay? It should be much more of a regular kind of monitoring. You know, if it's Saturday night and you and your partner are sitting and watching TV, it's probably good to turn to your partner and say, you know, is there something else you'd rather be doing than sitting and watching TV? You know, do you miss when we were, you know, more affectionate, more romantic? So, Jeffrey, there were probably, so that you learn from the experience you had, it might be valuable to look back on the many, many moments that may not have been satisfying to your partner at the time. It's important to find out well before a breakup, are we doing okay? And it's not only legitimate. I think people who don't take stock of the quality of their relationship in healthy ways, people who don't take stock, who don't say, are you getting your needs met, set themselves up for the relationship dissolving.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for calling in with us.
Thanks for listening.
Really appreciate it. You know, we had an email here from Brian, Dr. Lease, that said, my marriage suffered from infidelity, but rather than seek a divorce, we sought marriage counseling, and now we have an excellent marriage. I would encourage your listeners to go to great lengths to salvage a marriage, especially when children are involved, because having step-parents and custody battles is horrible for children. Just like having an affair, getting a divorce over something such as infidelity is a decision based more on your emotional rather than a thought-out plan about what it takes to make a marriage work. I don't know if you agree with that, Dr. Lease, but I wonder if it doesn't raise a question of about this this counseling that you've mentioned several times folks should go to get rather than instantly seeking a divorce. What would post-affair counseling even look like? When a couple takes the brave step to try to work it out and comes to a counselor, to a psychologist, what should they expect?
The most important thing that post-affair counseling should have is a heart-to-heart, you know, 100% honest, truthful decision on the part of both people about whether or not they're really committed to the relationship. It's very painful for all involved, for someone who's had an affair to come to counseling still being involved with somebody else. So the first thing that post-affair counseling should provide is an honest answer to the question, are you really committed to this relationship or are you just going through the motions? Mm. So two people walk in, they sit down, the counselor, therapist, whatever you want to call them, should say, what are you guys here for? And if they both wholeheartedly say, we really want to make this work, then it's a go. Off you go, and you try to understand. Then the next step would be figuring out what went wrong. Oh, there's a step between those two steps. If it's admitted that there was an affair, it's important that the two people get separated in a session so that the counselor can say, tell me more about the relationship. So let's just say she had the affair, the he versus she. She had the affair. He and she come in and talk to me. My first question is, are you really going to work on this relationship? If they say yes, it's a go. If one sounds tentative, I talk to them separately. So make sure you're talking to the person separately. If you get post-affair counseling, never, ever, ever lie to the counselor. Never say the affair is over if it's not. Never say you're really going to try if you're not going to. It is just so messy and dirty to have one foot in a relationship and one foot out of the relationship.
Are there times when you say to the couple after you've talked with them a couple of times, you know what, I think a divorce would be better?
I absolutely positively say that, but only under one condition, and that condition is that children are being damaged in ways that are absolutely obvious.
So you tell them to get a divorce for the sake of the children?
Yeah. There are people who just insist upon living under the same roof with children and not treating each other well. Some people will say to me, well, we don't fight. We're in separate bedrooms. And I say, well, do you talk? And they say, not really. That's torture for children. So kids come first in my mind. Parents and us adults can survive on our own, but children can't. So that's the only real circumstance where I say get a divorce. One of the most important qualities a therapist or a counselor can have is the ability to tolerate other people's pain. So no counselor should tell somebody to get divorced because they can't stand the pain that the couple is in.
816-235-2888 is the number to call, 816-235-2888. That's what Mary in North Kansas City did. Mary, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. What prompted me to call in was when you started talking about addiction. I, unfortunately, was the other woman. I was single and was heavily pursued by a newly married man. He had literally been married for about 2 weeks when I met him. And the sparks flew, and he pursued me, and I didn't run very hard from him, and made the mistake of having an affair with him, and it was absolutely addictive. It was a time in my life when my self-esteem was pretty low and was having a lot of my own personal struggles. And, you know, just the positiveness of the things he was telling me and everything, obviously it was a false positive. Luckily, we both made a very quick decision to just walk away I haven't seen him in, I think, 15 years. We just walked away from it. My husband that I'm married to now, I told him about it, like, probably within 2 or 3 weeks of us dating. So he would kind of know my history, and he's always known it. And probably about the first year or so of my marriage, I was almost afraid to be that fun, flirtatious person that I had been, because I was afraid I was going to be the one in the marriage to make the bad decision now, because I had been on the other side of it. And it took me quite a while to kind of find my comfort zone of those friendly relationships again, you know, where the line was and where I could have fun but not be inappropriate again. And it was hard, but it's been good, though. It's been very helpful. Now that I've been married for 13 years, it's been very helpful.
Mary, that's really a lot to share, and I'm very grateful for your willingness to talk about that on the air today. Thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome that you called and shared those things, because, you know, I'd rather people out there explain these things than me explain them. You explain them beautifully. Being vulnerable to having somebody who is married show you attention is very common. Doing that during a time when your esteem is low and you're having personal struggles. The fear of a new relationship when you walk away from an extramarital relationship. Everything you said, Mary, is educational, and I'm sure people who heard you talk as well as Brian and I appreciate it.
Bruce, I wonder if you could talk about the way she ended the relationship. This is, I think, a question a lot of folks have is, you know, how do you end an affair? And she talked about just walking away. They decided quickly this isn't going to happen anymore.
Cold turkey.
That's, again, the language of addiction. But is that the right way to do it?
It is the only way to do it. I invite any callers to call and say, oh, no, I didn't do a cold turkey, but I have.
There's no nicotine patch that is effective in this case.
You know, here's the problem. There are appropriate levels of self-disclosure between people who are attracted to each other when they're married to other people, or one is single and one is married to somebody else. There is an appropriate level of self-disclosure that should not be violated. Once two people go beyond friendship to talk specifically about what's going on in their lives that they don't tell their own spouse, complaining about one's own spouse, once you violate that rule and you disclose in ways that bring you closer to somebody than your own partner, there's no turning back. I mean, it's an uncomfortable, weird feeling from what I've been told. And so just say goodbye. And, you know, if you work in the same place they do, just have a very, very positive work relationship, but not a friendship.
Talking there about the person who's in the affair, what about the person who is concerned that their partner may be cheating on them? Let's assume they haven't been caught at this point. What is the thing that you should do if you wonder whether your partner, your spouse, your boyfriend or girlfriend is seeing someone else?
Suspicions come from changes in behaviors that are not expected. So somebody would suspect that their partner's having an extramarital relationship, appropriately, that is. They'd suspect it if the person suddenly started losing weight, started working out at a gym when they'd never worked out before, and then started losing interest in their own partner. That's a really common pattern. Some people even gain weight and drink more when they are involved in an extramarital relationship. So the person, the spouse, the partner who is who's concerned, suspicious, should watch for those patterns and say, what is going on? Where are you? What's going on with us? Tell me the truth.
I guess I'm wondering, though, is there a can this be overdone? I mean, obviously, if first time your partner says, I want to join a gym, you shouldn't say, are you having an affair? And I guess I wonder also, can't you possibly do more damage by acting suspicious?
Only if there's an affair going on. You know, last night I was sitting next to my wife and we were, you know, we're hanging around, talking, we're on the computer, et cetera. And knowing I was going to do the show today, I thought, what would either one of us say if the other one said, are you having an affair? If either one of us said that right now, the person would burst into laughter. It's like, are you kidding me? Because it shouldn't alienate. It should only, if somebody asks their partner, are you having an affair? it should only concern the person, like, why do you ask? Are you okay? Do you feel like I'm not loving you well enough? In a healthy relationship, it should either make people burst into laughter or say, uh-oh, you know, what are you missing that you think I'd pull away from you? But no, ask. And you know what? Some of the worst damage is done by the lying, the deceit, the deception. So if you're in a situation where somebody's really changed dramatically in the way they treat you and everything you do they find fault with, it's time to figure out if they're in an extramarital relationship. And I don't, when somebody says I'm hiring a private detective, I do not argue that. I don't say go get a detective, but it's important to not be tortured by the changes in your partner's behaviors, especially if it's triggered by them involved with somebody.
And very quickly, is there a way, if you do discover it's happening, whether you find out from someone else or your partner confesses it, is there a best first way to respond?
I, of course, believe that getting professional help is the best way because professional help may be one's own, you know, it could be someone's own church or synagogue or mosque or whatever. It could be turning to a religious, spiritual leader who's trained in these things. But it's important to have a third party that really knows these patterns and knows the extent to which, you know, you're going to need excavation to pull you out of the hole you're in. But it's reasonable for somebody to say, I want 100% access to everything that from here on in so that I know what you're doing. That's not a lot to ask. My wife, as all spouses, has complete access to my email. I don't keep secrets. What I always like to say is our problems are only as big as our secrets. So if your partner has secrets, they shouldn't. If you have secrets, you shouldn't have secrets from your partner. So, yeah, go looking and figure out what's going on and get it fixed.
Not a lot of time left here, but Phil in Kansas City, Missouri, could you very briefly ask us your question here for Dr. Bruce Leese?
Sure. I have two questions about correlations between behavior in early life and perhaps later life and how it relates to the possibility of affair. One is the promiscuity of younger people in society today. I'm speaking of sex parties, that sort of thing, how that leads to affairs in later life, like it's okay. And second is addiction to pornography. At any stage of life, is there a correlation or causational effect towards having an affair? And I'll take my answer off the line.
That's a great question, Phil. The so-called hookup culture of today's younger generation and obviously the easier access to pornography, what impact does that have?
My experiences and looking at the research would lead me to think that there's no correlation, and I'll explain why. There are some people that never, ever, ever – a lot of people I've seen for infidelity have had almost no sexual experiences in their lives, never interested in pornography or anything. And they're married for 10 years and suddenly, you know, somebody really likes them a lot and they don't recognize that transition because they weren't involved with sexual relationships. They don't have the experience to know, hey, this is transitioning into sex. And then so at one end, you have people who are inexperienced with sex and sexuality and dating and all that. And they kind of, in air quotes again, they innocently start doing stuff they shouldn't be doing because they don't understand where it's going. On the other hand, there are people who have been promiscuous in their past. And as they grow older, they think, wow, that was an awful time in my life. I don't know what I was thinking. So not only have I never seen the research, I've never seen research support the idea that promiscuity in youth or sex in youth or pornography leads to affairs. But clinically, like I said, people who have never had experience can fall into something they don't understand. And people who have had a lot of it can say, not me, I'm not doing that again. That wasn't even worth it.
I wonder, Bruce, in the time we have left, if you could talk a little bit about the couples who, as far as they know, are not having any of these problems right now. But if you had to give them a few tips to keep their marriage in a place where this isn't a temptation, it isn't something they have to worry about, not just their marriage, other kinds of relationships too, what advice would you give?
I have a list of things in my head that always comes to my mind when I think about couples that are getting along. I'm talking to the ones who do get along really well.
Right.
You probably are best friends. Make sure you stay best friends. And for all the reasons you fell in love, make sure that you keep water and fertilizing that. Couples that don't laugh and play together, I think, are at risk for looking for that elsewhere. Keep laughing, keep playing, make each other laugh, make each other smile. communicate about the important things, and even more than communicating is listen, listen, listen well. Solve problems rather than just complaining about them. And don't do anything that you wouldn't want your spouse, your mother, your best friend, or your children to see or read about. And I guess last, to keep that relationship strong, never, ever lie to your partner, even by omission, unless you're planning a surprise party for them.
There, that is the one lying exception that is
you can committed. Lie if it's truly a surprise party. It doesn't work when you're having an affair and you go, "Oh, I was just trying to surprise you with something." But
if you need to grow your relationship, what's one thing you can do to do that? You said always grow your relationship. What's the place to turn for that?
Make time, ask questions, be interested in the other person, be truly interested at a profound level. What did you do today? How did it go? What does it mean to you? Those kinds of things are really important.
That's Dr. Bruce Leese. He's been our guest today and often here on Central Standard, our resident psychologist, talking today about marriage and faithfulness. Thank you so much for being with us again, Bruce.
Always enjoy it. I always enjoy working with you, Brian. Thank you very much.
My apologies to Dawn and Daisha, who we didn't get to their calls today. We hope you'll call us again another time. You can find our archives and our podcasts and a lot more on the Central Standard page at kcur.org. We hope you'll join us tomorrow for a look at Good People, which is a new play at the Unicorn Theater. Also, we'll have special weather coverage. Is there going to be some weather tomorrow? I guess there is. Up to Date is coming up next. They'll have an interview with underwater National Geographic photographer Brian Scarry. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Brian Ellison, and this is Central Standard.